Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by a man whose token is done, Matt Clayton.
Hey, how's it going?
Jeez, your token's done.
Nice.
Do you like it?
I do.
Okay, I'll post it in the Constructed Critics group and on the Patreon page for people that want to see it. They're working on the OB token. He's working on the OB token now, and I'm really, really excited for the way that both of these are turning out, Matt. These are magnifique.
Yeah, the OB token looks sweet, too.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. Well, this week I'm also excited for, Matt, because we're going to do our Pick 2 set review. That's right, we are continuing the Pick 2 set review. Mason and Trey may be gone, but may their memories live forever, Matt. No, we actually asked them. I actually said, hey guys, can we continue to do this? And they were like, yeah, please do.
Going to be immortalized through us stealing their idea.
Exactly. I mean, it was a good idea. That's literally why they became co-hosts. I was like, you know what? I like Pick 2 set review. What if I take them from you and all?
Takeover.
Exactly. No, I'm just kidding. It's funny if true, though. You know what else is funny if true is just how good the deals are at Oasis Games. Matt, you can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good. It's funny, some cards got banned in Modern recently. People were talking about all their cards. And I feel bad for people that kind of have to start from a new place in Modern. But if you haven't bought from Oasis Games and are looking to get into a Modern deck, Matt, 15% is going to really, really help with those bannings.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. If you're buying an entire Modern deck, it's a massive savings.
Yeah, so I know that that's actually how Mason got into Modern when he was a podcast listener, is he used the code, bought his Modern deck, and just rode the train.
Yeah, it's like hundreds of dollars on some Modern decks, you know, so.
Right. So I highly recommend that. And don't forget to check our other sponsor at PureMTGO.com. We really appreciate Pure MTGO and MTGO Traders, their sponsor. It's really cool to get to work with them. I use MTGO Traders all the time. I read the articles on Pure MTGO. So it's a really cool partnership, and it's one that we were really, really excited to announce. So thank you so much to them for that sponsorship. Matt, there's going to be no Patreon question this week. I didn't ask for one in the Facebook group. But that is something that I'm going to start doing weekly. Rather than posting a monthly thread, I'll actually post a thread in the Facebook group and on the Patreon weekly moving forward, just to make the questions more relevant at the time. I find that sometimes we'll get like four questions at the beginning of the month, and it's like, well, these aren't really relevant anymore. So instead of pulling from a pool of questions, I'm actually going to post every single week and take questions from either the Patreon or the Facebook group for Constructive Critics of $5 or more, just so we can kind of get, you know, more timely stuff on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it could always be that if there's something that's a little more timeless that we can, you know, go back to it later or whatever.
Right.
And multiple questions 1 week.
And there will definitely be like Patreon-only episodes where, you know, if we have enough questions, we'll just answer them all on those episodes. So kind of stuff like that gives us kind of more options to do. And I just want to also be giving the most value to those patrons. And, you know,
right.
I think this is a good way to do it.
Where are we at with the Hangout stuff?
Yeah, we need to do a Hangout for this month. We needed to pick a date. But yeah, I'll post it in the Constructed Critics group and we'll get the next one planned.
Excellent. So that's something that the patrons can look forward to as well.
Yeah. So if you want to be a part of any of this, go to patreon.com/CCMTG and it'll be exciting to do this one. I want to give Patreon shout outs to Michael.
Okay.
Robert and Ben. Thank you so much to each of you. Ben is actually our longest patron, Matt.
Nice.
He has been a Patreon, I think, for basically as long as it's been up. So shout out to him. It's greatly appreciated. You know, this stuff wouldn't be possible without people like you. All right. And with that, Matt, let's go into our main topic. This week is Pick 2 Set Review. Like what I said at the beginning of the show, Pick 2 Set Review actually comes from the Evens Odd podcast. And then we actually brought it over when Trey and Mason came on. And the way this works is instead of doing a top 10, what we do instead is we come up with topics and we pick two cards for each topic, or for each category, Matt. Our topics this time are Sleeper, Hit, Eternal Spotlight, Hopeful, and Potential Oops. We call this one the Oko category.
We've been calling it that for a long time now. It's just coincidental.
Yeah, we didn't know what an Oko was, but we thought it was a great name. Matt, so should we start with Sleepers?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So why don't we start with... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't I read mine off first and then give some thoughts on it, and then you can go to yours.
I was just going to explain what a sleeper is.
For Yeah, absolutely.
For those wondering. So a sleeper is going to be a card that we think is maybe being underappreciated. People didn't quite don't quite know how good it is, and it could probably pop up, and we wouldn't be surprised if it did pop up. For example, I was going to have Dream Trawler on my sleepers, but it's somewhere else on this list because it's been figured out.
Fair enough.
Matt, what are your two sleepers?
So my first sleeper is Ashiok Nightmare Muse, which is 3 UB. It's a Planeswalker, 5 loyalty, plus 1, create a 2-3 blue and black Nightmare creature token with whenever this creature attacks or blocks, each opponent exiles the top two cards of their library. Minus 3 is return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, then that player exiles a card from their hand. And then the minus 7 is you may cast up to 3 face-down cards your opponent owns from exile without paying their mana cost. Or sorry, face up cards.
So I got the chance to play against this card in the early preview event, Matt, and I think a lot of people have now gotten to play against this card as the Esper Heroic decks have started popping up. Was this a sleeper before this set came out for you, or do you still think it's a sleeper?
I think it's a sleeper still. I think it's possible that it won't actually find its time to shine until later on the format, like after a rotation. But I do think that this card is on the power level of, like, you know, a standard player.
It's funny, both of your sleepers, when you set me your list, I said, these were going to be my other, these are the other two that I wanted. And Ashiok was definitely one for me. It was just like, I saw that card and I think I actually, when it came out, I think I texted you and Mason and even said, like, this card seems really powerful. Am I missing something? Like, all of its abilities just are good enough. And, you know, it's obviously a rate card, right? It's a card that's just good on rate. It's a value card. But I also think that it wins the game a little bit faster than you expect.
Right. Yeah, I think it's... this is something I bring up a lot, but I think that returning something to your opponent's hand, if the game is about tempo even at all, is equivalent to killing it. And if you're also adding on that they have to exile a card from their hand, sometimes it's even better than, like, the Obnixilus minus, for instance.
Right.
Obviously, plus to make any creature is going to be great.
Yeah, and this is a 2-3. Like, this is a hefty creature.
Right, yeah, it's definitely a reasonable body. The ability would not be that relevant, except for the fact that it combos into the ultimate.
Right. Both of them actually combo into the ultimate, right? Because they exile the card from their hand.
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so it's a big one. And also, this when your opponent's empty-handed, this actually straight up just kills enchantments and stuff that you wouldn't normally be able to kill in these colors, right? Because you just bounce it back and then right. It's exiled forever.
Yeah, it's also a lot more powerful when they're empty-handed because normally they're not going to want to exile something from their hand that you're going to be able to get back later. So,
right.
Like, you know, just in general, they're going to exile the worst card from their hand, but if they only have one card, then, you know, the option's not theirs.
Exactly. What is your next card?
So my next sleeper is the Acrone War. Let me find it real fast.
It is...
So it's 3R. It's a saga. The first mode is gain control of target creature for as long as the Acrone War remains on the battlefield. The second mode is until your next turn, target or creatures your opponent's control attack each combat if able. And then the third mode is each tapped creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. So basically on the first mode, you get a little act of treason that goes over multiple turns. On the second mode, you basically require, you know, it forces your opponent to attack with all their creatures, meaning that they don't have a lot left to block. And then the third mode will destroy all their creatures, in theory.
Yeah, we talked about this card in our set review that we did for the patrons. And I was pretty sure when I read this card, I was like, wait, what does this do?
Yeah, I think I was a little bit low on the card. Like, my opinions on a lot of these cards have changed since we did our Patreon-only episode, so, you know, highly recommend listening to both. but yeah, I think this card is quite a bit better than I thought it was. I think that just the steal mode is almost there anyway, right? Like we're already paying 3 mana for Act of Treason in standard right now.
This steering up steals a creature for 3 for 2 turns, right? Like,
right, and if you're playing anything like... I hadn't considered it along with, you know, Sacrifice Outlets, which there are actually a lot of really good ones in this set, even. And
would you consider it with Thassa?
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's another interaction that can come up. Because of the interesting wording of Thassa, if you blink it, then you just control it for the rest of the game.
Yep, that's correct. What do you think of the last ability?
So the last ability, I mean, it's going to be one-sided wrath as often as not, right?
Right.
Basically, you're trading some life points usually for a wrath.
What kind of decks do you think will play this card?
Like I said, I think that like a red-black sacrifice deck makes the most sense to me. I don't really think it's quite there for like an aggressive red deck, and I don't think that the cards support a mid-rangier red deck.
Sure.
But I think anything that's trying to sacrifice creatures and just like potentially attack your opponent would be the other reason.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we move on to mine?
Yeah.
Well, my first one is Treacherous Blessing, Matt. Do you know what this card is?
Yeah, so Treacherous Blessing is a 3-mana enchantment. It's 2 and a black.
When it enters the battlefield, you draw 3 cards.
Right.
Whenever you cast a spell, you lose 1 life. And then when it becomes the target of a spell or ability, you sacrifice it.
Right. Yeah, a little bit of protection against bouncing it with Teferi or things like that.
Right. I already thought this card was good, and now I've played with the card, and I'm like almost exactly where I thought I would end up. Like, I think this is really good in Mono Black Devotion as a way to get through your deck. It's also crazy that I've been playing Mono Black Devotion in Standard a little bit with like the Cat Oven version specifically. And holy crap, you gain so much life that this 1 life per spell just doesn't matter.
Sure. Yeah, I can buy that. I also had considered this with like Doom Foretold. I think that's a pretty nice.
Yeah, that's true. Interaction. True. Yeah, I think Doom Foretold decks, you know, they obviously, that deck even plays its own Teferi that you can target this with and then get it back with Doom Foretold sometimes. So
yeah, you could. It's not ideal, though, because then you don't draw the card with Teferi.
Well, sure. I think you'll be okay with it if you get the...
Yeah, it's true. You do get to draw 3 on the ETB, so it's not the end of the world. But, you know, I'm addicted to value like everybody else.
Addicted to value. I think this card fits into a couple different decks. It is interesting that the mono-black aggressive decks have now leaned more towards Rakdos and Devotion. So it'll be interesting to see how this card could have fit into some of those decks, or if it just naturally fits into one of those two decks now.
Right.
My other sleeper that I have, Matt, is Phoenix of Ash, and Mason Clark texts me and said that he thinks people are catching on to this one.
Yeah, I can buy that. It's a card that has a lot of value. So it's 1 red for a 2/2 flying haste. It has fire breathing +2/+0 for 3 mana. And you can activate that ability any number of times. And then it has escape 4, and it escapes with an extra +1/+1 counter. So it's a 3/3 when it escapes.
Yeah, I think that if you just compare this to, I know Erin Barrett, she won what was either a classic, I think it was a classic, right, with Mono Red early last season. She was playing Chandra's Phoenix in that deck. And, you know, or maybe that was 2 standards ago. Either way, I think back to that deck.
I don't think Chandra's Phoenix has been in Standard for a second now.
No, it's in Standard right now.
Is it?
Yeah.
In what set?
The last core set.
Okay.
The Chandra core set.
Fair enough.
Maybe I'm wrong. it's not Chandra's Phoenix I'm talking about.
That's what I assumed. You're talking about the one that gets like +3 attack every time.
What is the card called?
Combat damage. I do not know.
Chandra Spitfire is the name of the card.
Okay.
You compare this card to something like Chandra Spitfire, and, you know, I think that Erin Barrich had this card in a deck that they won a classic with, that she won a classic with, not too long ago. And I think this card's just better, and it doesn't make you build your deck in, like, any specific way, which Chandra Spitfire does. This card just goes into any red aggressive deck. And I think that's pretty helpful. I know that Sandy Dog MTG was winning with this card. I know that I retweeted a couple things from the Arena Mythic Cast account where people were just doing well with Mono Red because of this card. I think it's still a sleeper. I think people still aren't prepared for a Phoenix of Ash to fire breathe over their face.
Sure. One thing that's kind of interesting, though, about the comparison here is that I think that the worse that the Mono Red deck is, the more interested I am in playing something like Chandra Spitfire. But the better the mono red deck is, the more interested I'd be in playing something like Phoenix of Ash, because Chandra Spitfire can kind of do it by itself.
Right.
Even though it's a lot worse in general.
Right.
Whereas this card kind of needs a real deck built around it, right? Like, you're not usually going to get soloed by a 4-4 flyer, or a 3-3 flyer, rather.
Right. No, it's true. And I think that, you know, Chandra Spitfire and some of the other cards have the benefit of having Calamity of War be a big part of that deck. Right. So
yeah, I mean, I've definitely been 30'd by that deck in one turn, like, just out of nowhere.
Right. But I think Phoenix of Ash is just overall a better card, and I think that people didn't quite see that going into the set just because of how anemic the mono red deck has been over the last little while.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree that Phoenix of Ash is a much better card.
Should we move on to our next category?
Yeah.
We have our hits, man. So hits are going to be obvious things that are just, we just think they're straight up good. We just think they're one of the cards that is one of the better cards in the set. And I'm going to go first, Matt.
Okay.
With Euro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. This card is one, a green, and a blue for a 6/6 legendary creature Elder Giant. When it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it was escaped. Whenever Euro enters the battlefield or attacks, you gain 3 life, draw a card, and put a land from your and then you may put a land from your hand onto the battlefield. It also has escape for green, green, blue, blue. Escape 5 other cards from your, or exile 5 other cards from your graveyard. So, this card got a lot of hype, obviously, when it was previewed. I think the hype was a little overblown. I still think the card's quite good. This is one of the cards that made people immediately lean towards some of the already great green-blue ramp decks that obviously top-aided the last Mythic Championship. I think the card's just powerful and good enough. I think that it is definitely not trivial to get the 5 cards in your graveyard at times. And it makes it very important what Cavalier of Thorns does. And I also think that one of the things that is making this card worse is people aren't playing actual Explore anymore, the Growth Spiral, which I think you need to make this card work. So I would be interested in trying some of these decks more with things like Arboreal Grazer, this, and Growth Spiral, and just going really land heavy.
Sure. What do you make of the fact that the Sultai ramp decks are not playing this card, where the Simic version does look like it is?
I don't know. What is your take on it?
The only data we really have is the one standard challenge, and then the standard league deck dump. But it looks like people that are playing Sultai ramp are not playing Uro, whereas the
I think that the cards...
Simic versions are the Simic version looks a lot more creature oriented. Honestly, it's more of an elementals deck. Looks like.
Yeah, that's true of most of the Simic versions.
Right.
Anyway, what I was gonna say to answer your question, actually, I think that the card's just worse than we thought it was. Like, it's just not quite good enough to be like a 4 of auto slam, you know, this is what my deck is built around kind of card. It's just a very, very good role player in these style of decks.
Sure. Yeah, that was really what I was getting to. Like, it's certainly in older formats, especially, we've seen it's seeing almost no play in the spots that people thought it would be played in.
Right. My last.
That being said, I definitely agree that it's going to see a lot of standard play for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Yeah. My next hit, Matt Kling, you know, it's a card that I said was going to be in my sleepers because nobody was talking about it. I was doing the streamer showdown. Immediately, the first thing I wanted to build was Blue Eye Control to put this card in my deck. I think people have caught on.
Yeah, that seemed like one that would get figured out at some point, right? Like,
yeah. So Dream Trawler is blue, blue, white, white, 2 for a 3/5 creature Sphinx flying lifelink. Whenever you draw a card, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn, and whenever it attacks, draw a card. Discard a card, and Dream Trawler gains hexproof until end of turn. Tap it.
So this card is just straight up unplayable without that last line.
Yeah.
The last line makes it completely absurd.
Yeah, it's like this weird, really hard to kill flying Baneslayer Angel.
Yeah, I mean, if it was like, you can't usually use the Dies of Doomblade argument, but when you're casting a 6-mana flyer or whatever, you can kind of use it, you know? Like,
right.
If your 6-mana flyer is just dying to Murderous Rider all the time and doesn't do anything when it enters the battlefield, that's right. A problem. But this one, it's like a Baneslayer Angel that they just can't kill.
Right. And also, if you ever get to attack with it, it's just like, all right, well, I don't know how you're ever going to kill it now.
Right.
So I think the card is just slam dunk. I think it's probably going to end up in Historic I actually thought about playing this in Pioneer for what it's worth.
Sure. I mean, it's not impossible.
Like,
it's, I don't know. It's a little unlikely only because, like, first of all, it's competing with Elspeth, Sun's Champion. And second of all, like, as far as a sideboard card, right, you would just rather have Lyra because you're only saying
it in
matchups.
Right. I would want it in the main deck. It would be, like, over Elspeth but I don't know. Elspeth, Sun's Champion certainly has a better place in the format right now just due to the fact that there's, you know, large creatures in play.
Yeah. She just sets the bar really high, right? Like, she's just good in every board state, whereas this one is really only good if your opponent's trying to attack or block, which sounds like all the time, but it's not always true.
It's true. All right. Your hits are?
So my hits are the other giant, Kroxa, which is black red to cast. When it enters the battlefield, if you didn't escape it, sacrifice it. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, each opponent discards a card. Then each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card this way loses 3 life. And then it has escape for black, red, red, exile 5 cards, and it is a 6/6. And the second ability is all to say that if they discard a card that's not important, then they take 3 damage.
So this card is, I'm just going to say where I have this card so that we can have the conversation. I have this in Oops.
Sure.
So I think this card might be like extremely unfun. I don't know that it's like potentially too good. That's not really why I have this in Oops. I have it in Oops because this might just, like, completely make games of Magic, like, not fun at all.
Right.
And it just deals so much damage so quickly in a lot of decks. And so many decks that I can just configure in my head. I hope this card isn't good, because I think if it is good, then it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a... It's interesting, right? Because it restricts your opponent's resources and then demands that they have a lot to try to get rid of this card that, like, keeps coming back and back and back.
Right.
And then the one time that they don't have enough ways to answer it...
It just kills them immediately.
Yeah, they just take 9 and then die.
Yeah, I hope this card isn't good, because, I mean, once it comes back, like, you're just like, okay, I'm down 2 cards, I'm down 6 life, and now they have a 6/6 in play.
Right.
It's like, what do I do? Yep. So... That's where I'm at on this one. Do you think that it will be just good just on kind of this conversation?
I mean, I think it will be. I already thought it would be good, obviously, right? I have it as a hit.
You hit, yeah.
I am not super worried about it being broken, but we'll see.
Why don't we talk about your next hit, which is Shatter the Sky?
Yeah. So Shatter the Sky is 2 white sorcery. Each player who controls a creature with power 4 or greater draws a card, and then destroy all creatures.
This card seems like a pretty easy hit.
Yeah, it's just a 4 mana Wrath. I mean, we just haven't had a 4 mana Wrath in single color in Standard for, you know, several years now, so I think people have forgotten how good that effect is. The fact that your opponent sometimes gets to draw a card...
Hold on. Kaya's Wrath.
I said that it was single color.
Oh, single color. I'm sorry.
Also, Kaya's Wrath is 5 mana, let's be real.
I just wanted you to say that. That's actually what I was trying to get out of you. Yeah, I think this card just seems quite powerful to me.
But seriously, though, like, how many games have you won because your opponent played an island or whatever and they had Kaya's Wrath in their hand? Like, I know I've certainly been on that end of it a lot of times where I'm just looking at my opponent's island and I'm like, well, they can't even play the fourth land and then play Kaya's Wrath next turn. It's just not possible. So I can just unload everything to the board, like, consequence-free.
Right.
And that's just not going to be true against Shatter the Sky. Like, it's going to make you play around 4 mana Wrath no matter what, unless you can't play around it, and then you're just going to lose to it sometimes.
Yeah, it's funny, because I think that, you know, the question a lot of people are asking is, like, is Day of Judgment actually too good? I think the answer is no. I just think this card's more interesting than Day of Judgment. They've already printed Day of Judgment. Why do they need to print Day of Judgment again?
I think that there is actually a pretty good argument to say that Day of Judgment is too good, though. Like, I think that it's... so format warping whenever you have a 4 mana Wrath in the format, like...
Yeah, but I don't know that changes the equation that much against Shatter the Sky. Like, even as somebody that plays Gruul all the time, I look at a Shatter the Sky and I'm not going to just play into it because I get to draw a card.
I agree that it's not going to be great. It's going to make this card worse. but it's not going to make it enough worse that it's going to be like
right. And against other decks that you want a 4-mana wrath against, oftentimes this doesn't even matter. Like,
yeah, it's true. When you're wrathing on turn four, most of the time this isn't gonna. It's just gonna be Day of Judgment.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, against green red or whatever, like oftentimes it's going to actually draw them a card, but
I think too often like that card just doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to compare to the 5-1 you just got.
Right, because you're going to follow up the Shadow of the Sky with, you know, you're in double spell potential also at this point as whoever's playing this deck. I just think this card's a home run, well designed, more interesting. I'm also interested in, you know, I know somebody already sent me a deck list. They said, I think their exact words were, this one's for the old CCMTG episodes, and they sent me a deck with this card in it. That played to the board. It's like an old Theros deck.
Sure.
What was it called? It was S for Humans. They sent me S for Humans with this in it, and I was like, nice. That's cute.
Yeah, the old 1-2-3-4 Wrath. Or, one drop, two drop, three drop, Wrath. God.
Yeah, that deck. And I thought that was super cute. So, all right. Our next one is Eternal Spotlight. Matt, your first Eternal Spotlight is Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah, Thassa's Oracle is blue-blue for a 1-3. Let me get the card pulled up so I can read it accurately.
Makes sense. There's a lot of words on it.
Yeah, so it's blue-blue for a 1-3. When it enters the battlefield, you look at the top X cards of your library, where X is your devotion to blue. Put up to one of them on top of your library and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. If X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game. So the fact that it says greater than or equal to means that you cannot break it up with a removal spell if you have 0 cards in your library for the win condition.
Sure.
So it's just better than Laboratory Maniac in basically every way that you could be.
You just win a turn faster.
It's the fact that you can go off with less mana is actually really relevant. Like I know in Ad Nauseam, I've definitely had scenarios where I exiled too many Saving Spirit Guides with, Spoils of the Vault or whatever.
Sure.
So it's pretty big. Also the fact that it can't die to removal is pretty big. The only real upside that Laboratory Maniac has is that it's a human.
Right.
But I think that this card is just enough better. And honestly, this card will probably see play.
It's really too bad that
in much fairer context as well, right?
Like, what is that angel called?
Angel of Glory's Rise.
Angel of Glory's Rise. It can't be Angel of Glory's Rise, fam. Can't.
Yeah, unless you have I think there's a card that like changes all creature types to something of your choice.
That's great.
But anyway,
I don't know that Oops All Spells is a deck anymore, so I don't know that it matters.
No, it doesn't. But I think that this card, anytime that you want to play Laboratory Maniac, probably should consider playing Thassa's Oracle instead.
Sure. Your next one is Underworld Breach. That's one in a red, Matt, for an enchantment. Each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's converted mana cost, plus exile 3 other cards from your graveyard. At the beginning of your end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach. So you're just trying to, like, you know, Lion's Eye Diamond people?
So there are a couple combos that I've heard with this card. I think that this card would be in the potential oops category, except it probably is only broken in formats that aren't really that impactful. Although, I have heard of a modern combo with it that sounded kind of cool, which is this card plus Manamorphose and Dredge Creatures. And then you can win with Thassa's Oracle, so they go in the same deck even.
Oh.
So you just play Underworld Breach, then you cast a Manamorphose dredging Stinkweed Imp, right? Then you cast Manamorphose dredging Life from the Loam, then you cast Manamorphose dredging whatever, and then eventually you get to no cards in your deck, and then cast Manamorphose to cast or for blue-blue, and then cast the Thassa's Oracle.
That's hot.
Yeah.
So it's like a turn to win.
Yeah, you would need to have 4 mana, right, to start, but...
Oh, because you need the 2 mana for Manamorphose. You're right.
Yeah, the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not that annoying then.
That's a cool one, though. I mean, you can still do it with Pyretic Rituals or whatever. I don't know how we're building our deck, you know, Simian Spirit Guides and whatnot, but... But anyway, so I think that is going to be kind of sweet. Then there's the Lion's Eye Diamond Brain Freeze combo. You can cast Brain Freeze, targeting yourself with Lion's Eye Diamond, and then just keep casting Lion's Eye Diamond and Brain Freeze yourself. Until you get to no cards in your deck, and then you can brain freeze them.
Right.
So that's kind of a cool one.
Yeah, I think this card will not be an oops, but we'll see. It certainly has the potential to be. to be
I mean, like, just on the face, right? It's a 2-mana Yogg-Will that doesn't care if you cast the card multiple times. And also, I mean, it also doesn't care if the card was already in the graveyard, which is a, like, somewhat real thing.
Yeah. And like you said, like, we're talking about Lion's Eye Diamond. Like, Eternal Spotlight, you know, could also, I mean, applies to everything, you know, in Constructed, right? But I think that we're getting to the point where Legacy is coming closer and closer to being Vintage.
Yeah, I think it's already crossed that threshold.
Shh, don't tell people, Matt. They don't like that.
Yeah. I love Legacy, but it's just not a real format outside of Magic Online. Like, you can play your FNMs or whatever. But...
Yeah, I sadly agree, because I also love Legacy. You know what else I love, Matt?
What's that?
Dryad of... I don't know how to say this. Illicin Grove?
Elysian
Grove? That makes more sense. It's probably that. So this card is also an enchantment. This one's an enchantment creature. And it is a 2/4 enchantment creature nymph. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. Lands you control are every basic land type in addition to their other types. I have not looked at MTGO results yet, Matt.
And that one costs 2 and a green.
2 and a green, yes. Did it make it?
I haven't looked at MTGO results either. Let's take a look.
I would assume that this card will see play. I already know that there are people who are very excited about it in multiple decks.
There's a one of in the Amulet Titan deck.
That is one of the decks that I've heard about it. Does that Amulet Titan deck have the Volkits in it?
It does not.
Okay. I saw a screenshot of someone playing Amulet Titan with this card and Volkit in their deck, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, I think that was the first thought that myself and some other people had with it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think also just I like this card better than Prismatic Omens, for example. I think that this card just fits better into what the Titan decks are trying to do right now as far as green red Titan.
Yeah, it definitely just straight up is better than Prismatic Omen, right? Because it gives you the Explorer effect as well.
Yeah.
I found a Titan Shift deck as well that went 3-2 in the preliminary, and they were playing 3 Dryads.
Yeah. So I think this card just has potential in Titan decks to see play. Its interaction with Volk, it's very powerful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so Prismatic Omen, for those that don't know, mean that, like, your 6th land will always trigger... Or Volk is it your 5th? Yeah. Is it your 6th?
Well, you need. Well, now I need to read Volokit.
I think it's after you have 5 mountains, the next one triggers. So it's your 6th land will always trigger Volokit, and
including if it's a Volokit.
Yeah, including if it's a Volokit, and you can also have more than one Volokit in that.
Right.
In
so
that
I,
spread of lands, which is a really powerful effect.
Right. So you can Scapeshift on 6 mana, put 6 lands into play, and you deal 4 times. You deal.
Yeah, including 4 Volokits.
Including 4 Volokits, you deal 6 times. 6 times, is it just 6?
No, it's 4 times 3 times
6.
It's 4 times 6 times 3, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So it's 24 times 3.
Yeah. Which is a lot. They're dead. Yeah.
72.
Yeah. I don't play that card in Velikit, but I am excited to try this one, I think.
Like we were just saying, a lot of it is, it's just better in a lot of ways, right? Like, first of all, the Explorer effect means that it's actually worth the card most of the time. Like, it's going to speed you up. And also, I mean, it already speeds you up on the Scapeshift turn, right? Because it already makes the Scapeshift cost or have require one less land. But it also is going to let you play additional lands. And also, it's a 2/4, which is something the deck would be interested in anyway.
Right. I think this card just is good all around in that deck. My next one, Matt, I believe in. I think this is going to do it. I think this is going to bring Dredge back. And also, potentially Phoenix, for what it's worth. This is Ox of Agonis. It's 3 red for a 4/2 creature ox, and when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand, draw 3 cards, and it has escape for red, exile 8 other cards from your graveyard. It escapes with a 1/1 counter on it.
Yeah, this deck is, or the, sorry, this this card rather is basically, it's basically Cathartic Union with flashback. And also, it triggers Prized Amalgam.
Yeah.
And it's a 5/2 or 5/3.
Yeah. I have no doubt this is going to see play in Dredge. Like,
yeah.
None at all. And red's trivial for the deck.
Yeah, I mean, I think every land in the deck produces
Red.
red, so
Like,
with the exception of like maybe Dakmor Salvage in some lists, but
sure. Yeah, I do you think that it has a chance in Phoenix?
I would be a little bit surprised to see Phoenix come back from this, just because like it doesn't do anything on the front side, right? Like you have to get it in the graveyard already.
Sure, but I think that you're just going to find ways to get this into the graveyard, right?
What are they though?
You're saying that if that was the case, Phoenix would already see play?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically does the same thing as Phoenix, right? It's something that gets you value once it's in the graveyard, but there's no Faithless Looting anymore, so.
Thank goodness.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think that the last little stint of Modern would have been quite a bit better with Faithless Looting in the format.
Yeah, but that's not Faithless Looting's, like. That's a weird. I mean, I would have said that most of Modern it would have been better with Pot Unbanned.
I think that that's probably just not true, though. It would be more fun for me, but I just don't think that's a healthier format, right? I think Pod becomes the only playable deck if Pod is unbanned. Whereas I think that if Faithless Looting was unbanned, I think that it would also.
Increase the number of decks.
I think it would, yeah, I think it would increase diversity rather than be the only good deck.
Yeah, I think Ox, I don't know. I think that it's got potential to, if Phoenix comes back in some way, I think it has potential in that deck.
Sure.
It's certainly not an enabler. You're right about
I
that.
mean, it could fit the role of like Bedlam Reveler in the in like the Mardu decks.
Sure. So that is gonna be it for Eternal Spotlight. Just kind of wanted to talk about, the other formats, Matt. Give the oldies some love. Speaking of oldies, I'm an oldie. I'm an old man. And I'm hopeful. And we're going to talk about hopefuls because hopefuls are the cards that we really, really want to see play, Matt. We'd be happy if they did. And we're going to start off with the card that I'm the most hopeful about, Matt. Because I've been sad, Matt. Because the thing in Magic that brings me joy is casting Fireball. And we just haven't had a playable Fireball. And this one I think is gonna get there. So Purphoros' Intervention is a red and X for a sorcery. You either put, for what it's worth, on the set review, I said X11s. It's not X11s.
Oh, definitely not
It
that.
would be way better if it was X11s.
Just in every way, though. Even
Yeah.
without the Risen Reef shenanigans.
Oh yeah, because its toughness would be way bigger.
Yeah, it would just be a lot better, and it would also be like it would have like pseudo like evasion, right? Because
Right, yeah.
yeah.
That's what I thought this card did in the set review when we reviewed it. I was immediately wrong when I looked at it in Arena. But having said, yeah, so it makes an X1 elemental with trample and haste. So it still has trample. So it's not like you're losing that part. Like they can't just like you do this for 20, they can't just like put a 1/1 in front of it and it stops it, right? And then you sacrifice that creature at the beginning of the end step. It is an elemental, so it still does Risen Reef stuff, which I do think is important. And it also has the second mode is Purphoros' Intervention deals twice X to target creature or planeswalker. So this already deals to creatures, already deals to planeswalkers, just straight up two mana for two and three mana for four. So it's gonna, I mean, it's gonna kill things real easy in a deck that kind of wants a spell in this slot. I just think it fits really well into that deck specifically, and I also think it could fit into the Gruul decks in some way. I think this is probably better as a removal spell than something like Domari's Ambush, for example, which they're already playing as at sorcery speed. I think this fits that bill a little bit better.
Sure. I mean, it certainly doesn't strike me as being like on Crater Claws level, right? Like, if it was just a shock
Oh,
for
baby.
one, that would be something. But
So,
like,
whew,
it's
gotta give
never
me
shock.
that.
It's never shock for one, right?
Gotta give me that not safe for work warning when you mentioned the card that qualified me for a Pro Tour, Matt. Whew.
I mean, I assume that that's a lot of why you're hopeful for this card is because, you know, it reminds you of Creator's Claw. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, if something's gonna qualify me for another Pro Tour, man, it's definitely this card. No, I just think I like the design of this card. I think it's super interesting. The twice X is also better than Crater Claws in a lot of situations, right? Like, sometimes you'll be able to kill things you wouldn't have been able to kill with Crater Claws like specifically creatures and planeswalkers, right? Just because of that X. Like,
it's true, it scales better, and also like you don't necessarily have to have something already in play, which is a big deal. But
yeah, so it's got a trade-offs. Obviously the X one I think is worse than the dome with Crater's Claws,
right?
So, but that being said, I missed Fireball and this one seems sweet. My next hopeful mat is Kallax Destiny's Hand. And I have a reason that this is hopeful. So people are probably, who know the podcast, are probably like, Spencer would never play this card. And while that's not true, there would be times where I would consider playing a card like this. For those who know, it's two.
People that haven't listened long enough would assume that, because this looks right up your alley if people knew about all your green-white Quest for the Holy Relic nonsense.
Sure. It's two. I mean, we weren't podcasting then. It's two green white for a 4-mana Planeswalker Kallax legendary. It comes before loyalty. It's +1. It's look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal an enchantment card and put that card. You may reveal an enchantment up from among them. Put that card into your hand and put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. -3. Exile target creature or enchantment you don't control until target enchantment you control leaves the battlefield. So creature or enchantment, and then -7, return all enchantment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. So here's the thing. I have no idea if this card is going to be good. The reason I want this card to be good is because if this card is good, Standard is probably sweet. Like, you're telling me there's a world in which the decks that we already are pretty sure are going to be playable are playable, and this card is playable. That sounds like a sweet format.
Sure. My big concern with this card is that it reads Boggles, and I think if that deck is good, the format is awful.
It reads Boggles?
Yeah, and I say that being, or you know what it even actually says? It says Green-White Prison, which is also an awful experience for everybody involved.
Sure. I don't know. I think that, like...
I say that having played Boggles a bunch of times in a bunch
and,
of prisons.
And prison. We literally just played Prison in Vegas, both of us.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We're just bad. We're just...
No, but I mean, it's worse if it's the best thing you can be doing, right?
Did we not think it was the best thing you could be doing?
Yeah, but not everybody did, right? Like, if it would have been the best thing you could do for, like, a long period of time and it became obviously the best deck, like...
Sure.
It's a lot worse.
Your first hopeful is Kiora Bests the Sea God.
Yeah, so it's funny because I'm giving you a bunch of crap for your last hopeful. And I thought the same thing about my hopeful because I was like, you know what? If this card's good, this format's going to suck. So I'm hopeful because I think this card is sweet. But I'm not really that hyped about the way that it's going to play.
So this is a 7-mana enchantment?
Yes, it's a 7-mana saga. It's 5 blue-blue. And its first mode is create an 8-8 Kraken with Hexproof. The second mode is tap all non-land permanents target opponent controls and they don't untap during their controller's next untap step. And then the third mode is gain control of target permanent and opponent controls and untap it. So the first mode is make an 8-8 hexproof.
So sick.
Can't be killed. It can be, but like...
My favorite mode of this... I was telling somebody that you put a hexproof... What did I say? The black enchantment that... That makes them sacrifice a creature every turn?
I don't know.
Well, we said it in the set review,
oh,
too.
Oh, you're talking about the Abyss?
Yeah, you put Abyss into play. That also kills them if they don't have any creatures in play. And then you
the
tap...
Abyss does that?
No, this Abyss does that.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow.
Then you tap all of their creatures for a turn and deal them 8.
Oh, it's the second mode is like kind of time walk in a lot of ways. So
yeah, and then the third mode is give me your best thing.
Right.
It's just a lot. It's a lot even for 7 mana.
Right.
Do you think it adds up?
I think it's definitely possible. I mean, that's the main reason why I wanted to see play is because I thought that this card might be good, and it would be kind of validating to see some constructed play.
Sure. Your next hopeful is also sweet.
My next hopeful is Allure the Unknown. Allure of the Unknown, maybe? Let me see if I can find it. Allure of the Unknown. So it's 3 black-red. Sorcery. Reveal the top 6 cards of your library. An opponent exiles all non-land cards from among them. then you put the rest into your hand. I don't know why the opponent exiles the non-land cards. But anyway, then that opponent may cast the exiled cards without paying their mana cost.
Okay. So, why are you hopeful this card is good? We kind of talked about it a little bit on the set review, but...
So I think that this card is just really sweet. I think that this is a lot of this leads to a lot of deck design space that I really like. There are some ways that I've thought of already to try to make this work. Like basically, you can try to play a bunch of cards that have recursion. Like so, if they go to the graveyard, you kind of get them back. You can play a lot of X spells, so your opponent can't really cast them. But either way, you're going to have to build your deck in a very specific way to use this card. But if it's good, then it's essentially 5 mana or 5 mana draw 5.
Yeah. The thing is if this card is good, it is 5 mana draw 5, and I don't know that I want that card to be anywhere.
I mean, it depends on what the deck building cost is, right? Like, if the deck building cost were, you know, play all the best cards in standard, it's not great, right?
Sure.
But if the deck cost were, your deck is kind of weird and synergy based, I think this card could be cool.
What did the draw 7 cost? That was a sorcery. Do you remember? It was like blue.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know what that card cost. That card didn't see any play.
Sure.
And then should we move on to oopses?
Yeah.
So your first potential oops is Elspeth.
Yeah. So my potential oopses are based off of how annoying I think they're going to be if they are good.
Similar to my first potential.
So, like, here's the thing, is that, like, if cards are broken, you can just ban them, and that's fine. But if cards, like, a little bit too good and kind of format warping, it ends up being in the format a lot longer than you would want, and it kind of makes the gameplay worse.
Kind of like Gideon.
Yeah, Gideon, Ally of Zendikar is one good, really good example. That was probably one of the bigger oopses, because it didn't ever get banned. It wasn't quite that level.
But man, was it annoying.
Like, super annoying, yes.
How'd you lose? My opponent played a Gideon. Good talk. I think the Elspeth Sun's Nemesis is kind of at that power level for what it's worth.
Yeah, I think it's not only very powerful, but also it's game warping in a way that even most planeswalkers aren't, because it just comes back over and over again.
Yeah. So the card is white 2 for a legendary creature or legendary planeswalker Elspeth with 5 loyalty. You minus 1 up to 2 target creatures you control get +2/+1 until end of turn, -2 creature, create 2/1/1 white human soldier creature tokens. I'm struggling reading cards today, man. -3 gain 5 life and has escape for 4 white, exile 4 cards. So actually not that many.
Right.
Yeah, I would, this is one of those cards that I think you can bring back twice. And if that's true, it's like I said, on that Gideon style of power level. But the other thing to your point, Matt, is that not only it doesn't end games the way that Gideon did. Like it ends games by coming back twice, and like this thing has just been in play forever.
Yeah, it's just like the grind your opponent into dust card.
Yeah, I think this card will be good. I hope it's not annoying. Like, this card is sweet.
Yeah, it's really just going to depend on how balanced that power level is. Like, it looks like it's pretty tame, right? Like, it's obviously powerful. If you have creatures in play already, the -1 is absurd. But yeah, we'll just have to see. Like, I'm actually pretty glad that they gave the gain 5 life -3, because that would be annoying if they could just gain 5 life every turn.
Right. Do you? Yeah, if it was just gain 30.
Right.
Yeah, that would not be the funnest. What do you think? What do you think of this card in other formats? Like, could this be a player in like blue-white control in something like Pioneer, or do you think it's kind of resignated to standard?
I really don't think that it's going to be a control card. I think it's possible that it sees Pioneer play in just like the white aggressive decks.
Sure.
But I don't think that this card is super playable if you're not expecting to have things in play before.
Already.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that most of the time, if I'm building with this card, unless there's something weird that I'm not even considering, it's because I am planning on using the -1 mode when I play it most of the time.
Sure. Tell me your next card is Dreamcrawler, which you already talked about a little bit. Well, how did this make your
We did talk about it a little bit. I think this card is potentially really annoying because it's just impossible to kill, right? Like, the only way to kill it is a Wrath or an Edict.
Yeah.
Or your opponent is Hellbent, which is also pretty unlikely. Like, it's not the best top deck, right? Although it's not a terrible top deck either, because it's just about to start drawing you two cards.
Yeah, I posted to Twitter before this card got big that I thought that it was Aetherling. And my opinion has not changed. I think this card is Aetherling.
Sure, I mean, it's better than that, though, right? Because Aetherling at least required you to have one mana open.
That's true! I'm just saying, like, when I saw this card, that was the comparison that I drew, and yeah, I don't even doubt that it's better. Like, people are saying, I mean, the thing about Aetherling is that you only ever needed to play one.
I mean, this is just always better than Aetherling, right? Like,
because it's flying, and...
Yeah, it just draws you two cards a turn. Like, Aetherling didn't do most of these things. This one has lifelink, it stabilizes you, like, it's...
Sure. Hey, man. I'm with you. But what I think this card is great. I'm really glad that they printed it. I think that blue-white control specifically in Standard just did not have a good... Like, you were playing the weirdest stuff. Like, Agent of Treachery as a one-of and, like, Finale of Glory. Like, it was weird, man. This is way better and what that deck needed.
Yeah, I also want to point out that I know that this isn't really a limited podcast, but holy crap, this card's busted in limited.
Yeah, it is an oops already in limited because it's a rare instead of a mythic.
Yeah, just like the wins every single game that anybody casts it in kind of card.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I'm up next. We already talked about Kroxa. My last oops, I believe I'm wrong on, and I'm glad that I'm wrong, but I never really thought that it would be broken.
I mean, the category is potential oops, right? Right. So, like, this is kind of the perfect card to put in there.
Yeah, so it's red, red, white, white for Haktros the Un... Is it Scared?
The Unscarred.
Unscarred. I was like, I don't know how to spell. legendary creature, human warrior. It's a 6/1. It attacks each combat if able. As it enters the battlefield, you choose 2, 3, or 4 at random. And then it has protection from each converted mana cost other than the chosen number.
It's so much better if it just says, like, because the way they templated it, it's you choose 2, 3, or 4. And then if you stop reading right there, card's bonkers. Completely busted.
Right. So the reason this is a potential loose is because it's like, you know, basically, what's the merfolk that has
protection? True name nemesis.
Yeah, it's like a true name nemesis in play. If, like, in a lot of cases... I don't think it's going to end up there. I haven't seen people talking about actually playing it. It sounds like in limited games, the random has been like, basically any time you land on 2, you just look at it and you're like, well, this was silly.
Yeah, I played against this opponent twice in limited. It was in the same match, and my opponent rolled 3 both times, and it was insane.
Okay. Well.
I even had a 3 drop at one point to try to block it, but then they just had like 1 removal spell is the thing, right? Like,
right.
It's not that hard to clear out. Like, it, basically, if you roll a number that dodges removal, it's just going to be insane.
Right. I think that any time that you don't roll the 2, this card will be good.
Yeah, I mean, even rolling the 2, it really just depends, right? I think the rolling the 2 is fine also.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that this card will be really unfun if it's good, and I just hope it's not good.
Right.
Like, it just, those games of Magic will just be like, okay, well, that was literally determined by a die roll.
Right.
And that's not the kind of game of Magic that I want to play. With that being said, Matt, that's it. You excited for this set?
I am. Yeah, it should be sweet.
There's no Okos, I'm pretty sure. Ooh, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
I would guess if there's an Oko, it's Elspeth. That's all I'm going to say.
You would guess if there's an Oko, it's Elspeth.
Yes.
Oh, man. Am I supposed to guess an Oko now?
You don't have to. I'm just saying, like, that one feels like the same kind of format warping kind of space. Sure. You know?
I would guess there's not an Oko.
I would also guess that there's not, too. I think
just,
Elspeth is
there's just only one Oko.
Well below Oko.
Like there's just one Oko.
I don't even know that Elspeth is going to be necessarily like a, you know, tier one standard card or whatever. I think it is, but I don't think that it's like so busted that I'm like definitely including 4 in every deck.
Yeah, I think that you know, Oko did this thing where it was everything. Like, it became all of Magic for a short time, right? Where it was like,
yeah, standard. It was impressive. I really never seen a takeover like that.
Like, even Jace the Mind Sculptor didn't do it like that.
I mean, he kind of did, though, right? Like, that was actually a very Jace-esque thing to have happen.
But it was...
Jace and Stoneforge Mystic both did the same thing, right? They like, started seeing play in Standard and then immediately saw play in Modern and then also in Legacy and then Vintage, and you're like, oh, well, this is just good in every format.
Yeah, I mean, once Batterskull was printed, it was pretty, you know the Legacy extended... Legacy and Extended immediately got hit, but obviously nobody was putting Stoneforge Mystic Batterskull in their Vintage decks. You know, Patrick Chapin talked about it, but nobody did it.
I mean, there have been Vintage decks that have played Stoneforge, but I mean more Jace the Mind Sculptor, obviously.
Right. I think that Oko was a special case, and we won't be seeing it from Theros Beyond Death.
Well, I think it's interesting to point out too that both of the cards that have been like that have been Planeswalkers as well, right? Like it's
sure.
It's just kind of a broken type.
Right.
Like Planeswalkers are very hard to interact with.
Right. So that's fair. You can find the show on patreon.com/ccpg if you want to support us directly. You can find me at Spencer and H. You can find Matt at the Witchkling. You can join the conversation by heading over to our Discord, link in the show notes. Or if you become a patron of $5 or more, you can join the Constructed Critics Facebook group. We have posted our next tournament for the Discord in February, so don't forget to check that out and sign up there. Super awesome. Going to be an exciting one with some awesome prizes in store credit to Oasis Games. Matt, thank you so much for joining me this week, man. Thank you so much to Mason and Trey for giving us the Pick 2 set review. And we'll see everybody next week.
See ya.